So now that you've seen what is supposed to happen with food from the time it goes from your mouth down to the upper part of the small intestine during the digestion phase, let's take a look at what can go wrong. So the first thing that can go wrong is you can have a problem with the production of acid. And there's three main issues that can happen with the production of acid. One is you don't produce any acid at all. That's called achlorhydria. Another is that you don't produce enough stomach acid, and that's called hypochlorhydria. And both of those lead to signs and symptoms of low stomach acid, which means you don't digest your protein real well, and you don't absorb minerals really well, and you might feel really heavy in your gut after eating because things just aren't getting broken down. You may feel bloated and gassy pretty shortly after you eat, and that may last for several hours. You can also experience burning, and oftentimes hypochlorhydria or low stomach acid is confused with too much stomach acid because they both can produce burning. And when you have a low stomach acid, if you treat it the same way as you would with excess stomach acid, in other words, to get the stomach to stop producing so much acid or to turn down the acid, you make the problem worse because you weren't digesting your protein and your minerals real well to begin with, and now that you've turned off the acid production, you're going to do it a lot less so. So the other problem that we associate with problems with the stomach is too much stomach acid, and that's called hyperchlorhydria. And that's what people typically think of when they think about heartburn and ulcers and burning sensations in the gut. That's what they think of, is you're making too much acid, just take an antacid. And in fact, hyperchlorhydria is actually quite rare. It only occurs in very young people, and usually pretty stressed out and hyper young people, teens and 20s, because as we age, the stomach naturally starts to produce less acid. So it's not a common problem. And then the kinds of things that can occur as a result of hypochlorhydria are ulcers and gastritis. Gastritis is an inflammation of the lining of the stomach, and ulcers is where there's actually a it's broken through. There's actually some like wounds, open wounds in your stomach. And the thing that most people don't realize is that most ulcers are not caused by hyperchlorhydria, too much stomach acid. Many of them are actually caused by something we'll look at shortly, which is a gut bug called H. pylori. And they also can be caused by low stomach acid. Let's take a look at the next thing that can happen, and that has to do with acid being in the wrong place. So your esophagus is not lined with the really, really thick coating of mucus like your stomach is, because the stomach is supposed to be having acid in it, and it needs that extra layer of protection. Your esophagus is not supposed to have a lot of acid in it. Yeah, it has a little bit of mucus in it. It has a standard mucus lining because it's got to handle things from the outside that can be pretty caustic, like acid foods and alcohol and things like that. But it really doesn't have that really thick protective lining because it's not supposed to be handling something with a pH that's as low as what's in the stomach after it produces acid. The pH of the stomach actually goes down to 2, and that's on a scale of 1 to 14, with 7 being neutral in the middle, and anything below 7 being acidic and anything above alkaline. So 2 is very, very acidic, and that's what your stomach contents would be after producing hydrochloric acid. If that acid seeps up, back up through the valve between the esophagus and the stomach, that hurts. It hurts the esophagus. And initially, you may just feel a little bit of burning when that happens. And when it's initially happening, you may not notice it at all until it's happened enough where it causes some erosion into the tissue, and that's called esophagitis. The reflux, which is the acid going up into the esophagus, or the stomach contents actually going up there, is often called heartburn. The technical medical term for it is GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. And it's a very common disease. And we'll look at causes of it in a short while. Another thing that can happen is infection with a bug, a bacteria called H. pylori. And what it does is it bores its way into the lining of the stomach and can produce ulcers. Another thing that can occur is stomach cancer. Stomach cancer is not going to be the first thing to occur. Stomach cancer generally occurs in folks who have had problems, some of these other problems, for a long time, and there's been an erosion and ulceration and irritation of the stomach lining, and it no longer is able to heal itself. Enzyme insufficiency can happen, and that's usually because the pancreas is not producing enough enzymes. Could be that the stomach's not producing enough pepsin or pepsinogen, which is what it produces. But usually when we say enzyme insufficiency, we're thinking about those enzymes that the pancreas produces. Remember, amylase for starch, lipase for fat, and protease for protein. And when it doesn't produce enough of those, you get signs and symptoms of enzyme insufficiency, which we will take a look at, because I want you to understand it and understand what might be going wrong with your digestive woes. You can also get pancreatitis, and pancreatitis is an inflammation of the pancreas. This is not a common disorder. It's very commonly happens, though, in alcoholics, very commonly associated with alcoholism, and it's very, very dangerous disease. And then pancreatic cancer, which, although rare, is a very particularly deadly form of cancer. The survival rate for that is much lower than other forms of cancer. Let's now take a closer look at what can go wrong in your digestive tract. And I want you to understand how to differentiate between where the problem might lie so that you'll have a really good understanding of how to correct the underlying dysfunctions. So let's take a closer look at what happens when you have low stomach acid. And then we'll compare it to what happens when you have excess stomach acid or even an ulcer. So with low stomach acid, you might have excessive belching or aching 1 to 4 hours after eating. And that's critical, that time period that the symptoms come on pretty quickly, within an hour after eating. And you just may feel like, just like too much. It's too much. My Italian relatives would always say, agita, I have agita. You might have gas immediately following a meal. And that's a clue that it's something from the upper part of the digestion, because if it's lower part, if you've got some fermentation going on way down low, it wouldn't come on immediately after a meal. You might have offensive breath because the food is kind of sitting in your stomach and not digesting well. And so the vapors of that kind of sink, go up into your mouth. You might have difficult bowel movements. People that have low stomach acid have a hard time handling fiber, and they get constipated pretty easily. So if you're constipated, it doesn't always mean there's a problem with your lower bowel. You might want to be looking up further, especially if it's associated with some of these other symptoms. So differentiating how long after you eat the symptoms occur and what the nature of the symptoms are. Yeah, a sense of fullness during and after meals. So that's the kind of thing where you eat a meal and then you just feel excessively full. You may still feel somewhat hungry in a sense, but your stomach physically feels too full to eat anymore, if that happens. If you have difficulty digesting the really high fiber foods, high cellulose foods like fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, like that may cause you to have constipation. And finally, if you have undigested foods found in your stools, that's a real clear sign. Especially if you're chewing well, you shouldn't be seeing big pieces of food in your stool. You should be seeing just teeny tiny bits of fiber that's undigestible. So let's look at that in contrast to if you have a stomach ulcer or excess. You'll still get pain within an hour to 4 hours after the meal, but it may have more of a burning, and there may not be so much belching associated with it. Now, these are not like just cast in stone. You may have an ulcer but not have a burning, but it would be really rare. And you may have burning but not have an ulcer, and that's way more common. You feel hungry an hour or two after you eat when you have so much acid in your stomach. It's like the acid digests all your food, and then it starts to try to eat away at your stomach, which is basically what's happening. You may get heartburn when you're lying down or bending forward, because when that happens, the contents of your stomach would push up against that lower esophageal sphincter, as it's called, the valve between the esophagus and the stomach, and you'll have the contents of that going up into your esophagus. You might get temporary relief from antacids, food, milk, or carbonated beverages. And mainly, you've got all this acid brewing in your stomach. It's more than you needed for the food that you had. So when you put more food in there, it actually stops digesting your stomach and goes and digests what you're putting in. You may have digestive problems that get better when you rest and relax. So the moving around can jiggle the acid around into places it shouldn't be and cause it to hurt, and also can start to cause erosion, especially in an ulcer situation where there might be just part of the stomach that has a little bit of ulceration. And moving around will cause a jostling, and you may be able to find a position where you're not irritating that. And finally, you know, spicy foods will really aggravate somebody with excess stomach acid in an ulcer, because the spicy foods are even more irritating to the open wound in there. Caffeine, alcohol, peppers, those sorts of things. So that's a clue. So let's take a look at GERD, is also called heartburn. And let's take a look at the symptoms of that. And people call it heartburn because you get this burning sensation that goes upward from your stomach into your chest. And it's kind of in the heart area. And people say, oh, I got heartburn. It's burning in the heart area. And you may feel like there's food that's trapped behind that breastbone, or a burning pain in your chest. And it can also go up into your throat. And it's worse when you bend over, because the bending over causes the acid to disperse further upward. You may feel nauseous after you eat and have difficulty swallowing. The difficulty swallowing comes from irritation of the throat tissue from the acid that's being pushed up. You may get hiccups or belching as a result of GERD. You can also get hoarseness or change in voice from the constant irritation over your larynx, your voice box, which sits in your throat right around up here. So the acid is flowing upward in here, and any symptoms would radiate into the chest and into the throat. A sore throat after eating. Some people will say, I have a sore throat, and it's worse after eating. And these people could do well with a regurgitation kind of a protocol to help with keeping this acid contents in the stomach down in there, and also protecting the mucous membrane in the esophagus and repairing it after it's been damaged. And some people even get coughing and maybe even wheezing because of the irritation caused in both the throat and the chest. Let's take a look at some of the causes of heartburn. Big one is overeating. You put too much food into the stomach, more than the capacity of that little pouch, which is about, you know, the size of your fist, maybe a little bit larger. If you eat a lot more than that, like, you know, the typical gorging, going out to a party, eating at a buffet, that's going to cause you to have a problem with the pressure against that sphincter, which can cause some of the contents to seep up. If you exercise vigorously right after eating, now I'm not talking about going out for a little bit of a walk or even maybe a light jog, but if you start running or treadmilling or bicycling right after eating vigorously, playing tennis real hard, you're jostling around the contents of your stomach, and you can cause pressure on that sphincter and cause things to regurgitate. Alcohol is very irritating to that valve between the esophagus and the stomach, and it causes it to loosen and not hold as well. So alcohol can be a cause, as can be caffeine, as in coffee and chocolate and various things that have caffeine. If you wear tight-fitting garments, like you've brought a pressure right around that area, that chest, or even your waistband, where it's causing pressure that pushes upward on the stomach and the abdomen, that is going to possibly cause you to have heartburn and have the stomach contents seep up. If you eat while you're reclining, or right before you recline, so you eat and then you recline, you may not give the valve a chance to stay closed, and it may open up and cause you to have a problem with regurgitation. The other thing that can cause a weakening of that sphincter is smoking. And also stress. Cortisol has this effect when you're under stress on all the different valves in the digestive tract. So how would we know if we have low stomach acid or high stomach acid? And if we have low stomach acid, how do we correct it? Well, my favorite way of correcting it happens to not be providing it with the acid, but that's something that a lot of people do. And I'm going to teach you how to find out safely if that's something you can do. So I'm just going to teach you this, but I caution you, it's probably not a good idea to do this HCL challenge unless there's somebody supervising you, unless somebody, you know, you share the case and you're going through and understands what the possibilities may be and lets you know if you have contraindications. So HCL is this, the acid that's produced in your stomach. And like most everything, it can be replaced. You can take a vitamin supplement, you can take a mineral supplement, you can take a hydrochloric acid supplement. But before you do, it's not something that you just pick up the bottle and say, oh, take three with meals and go ahead and do it, because you can get in trouble if you take too much. You may need it, but you may only need one. And if you take three, you're going to be doubled over with burning pain in your stomach because you'd be taking way too much. We'll talk in a little while about alternatives to help your body start producing more acid. But sometimes that takes a while to kick in. And if you're really, really low and having a lot of symptoms, it's possible to get some good relief by doing this process. So all that caution aside, let me explain to you how to do an HCL challenge. It's a home test, like I said, and it's used to assess your need for stomach acid. And what you're going to do is get some HCL in capsules, not tablets and not powder. And that's very important. You need it to be in the capsule so that it doesn't affect your throat, your mouth, and your esophagus as it goes down. A tablet could start to dissolve as it's going down, and powder for sure can cause, you know, to get ulcerations in your mouth and your esophagus. So it's always got to be a capsule, and they typically come in 500 to 650 milligram capsule range. So you do one of those with your meal, and you want to have it have hydrochloric acid, but also some pepsin in it to help with the protein digestion as well. I do know that some people like to start with smaller amounts, and I know someone who opens one of the capsules and pours just a little bit into a very much smaller capsule as she gets used to what she needs so she doesn't irritate her stomach lining. You would take the HCL after a few bites of food, but never on an empty stomach or after your meals. Always after a few bites of food, not before, never on an empty stomach. And I would recommend that while you're doing this challenge, that you take the HCL at the very beginning of the meal, but you take it with the biggest meal you have of the day, the most complex meal to start, and only test on a big meal. The very much more detailed instructions for this is on your member page in a handout called How to Do an HCL Challenge. If you don't have any discomfort, if you don't feel burning, if you don't feel a warm sensation, you just would add one capsule per meal. And I more recommend it to be every day. So you have, say, your midday meal is your largest meal of the day. You take one with that. You don't feel any burning or warm sensation, you feel fine. The next day at your lunch meal, the same larger size meal, you want it to be similar in content, you add one capsule. So what you don't want to do is have, on the first day, you have a meal that has some protein and some carbohydrate and some fat in it, and it's a balanced meal, and you don't get any discomfort. The next day, you don't want to test that on a salad because it's a much different constituents. So you want to be careful that you don't increase it to two capsules and then find that it was way too much for a salad, but the two might have been perfect for the same kind of meal you had this day before. So it's really important to be careful. If you have any pain at all, burning or a warm sensation, you can ease that with a teaspoon of slippery elm into 8 ounces of warm water made into a nice thick tea. Wait about 5 minutes or so, maybe 3 minutes for it to thicken a little bit before you drink it, to just warm that and soothe that burning. And that will usually take away the burning very quickly. You can also try aloe vera juice, 1/4 cup. You can also try taking baking soda in water, maybe 1/4 teaspoon or so in 8 ounces of water. And at the next meal, go back to the dose that caused no pain. So once you've hit the point where you get a little bit of warm sensation, you've hit the point where you've had too much. You want to go back to what you had at the previous meal. So the reason I caution you with this is, for most people, they do get that warm sensation at just a little bit too much before they get the burning. But sometimes just going from one capsule to two or two to three puts you into a realm where you're going to have burning and it's going to be uncomfortable. So again, I caution you to just do it with supervision. Don't do it on your own if you've never had experience with this before. But I give it to you because you've probably heard of an HCL challenge, or you might hear of it. And I don't want you to go trying it without really explicit instructions on how to do it. Okay. So what are some of the symptoms of enzyme deficiency? We talked about that being another problem that can go wrong, that you could have deficiency of enzymes production, enzyme production by the pancreas. And the most severe, the most telling is when you have gas, bloating, and indigestion a half an hour to several hours after eating. That's usually a clue that you don't have enough enzymes to digest that meal. Another thing that you can have is a chronic bloating and gas 1 to 2 hours after eating. So you just get big and bloated, and it's pretty quickly after the meal. You also may have chronic constipation or diarrhea or both. So constipation, diarrhea, and both alternating, that can be a symptom of several things. But if you've got that with some of these other symptoms, then it's a good sign that you might have enzyme deficiency. You might be seeing undigested food in your stool. Well, we also saw that with low stomach acid. So you'll see there's a lot of overlap, and it sometimes takes some detective work and sleuthing to help you identify this. That's why I created the digestive analysis for you to fill out, where you can fill out that form, and it'll give you a chart at the end to give you an idea of where your symptoms most lie. It's not 100%, but it's a very good indication and helps a lot with breaking it down. And then the undigested food in the stool, we said that already. You may see bubbles or grease in the toilet bowl, meaning that your fat is not being digested, and that's often a sign of enzyme insufficiency. It might also be a sign of liver or gallbladder dysfunction, and we'll show you when we get to the liver gallbladder topic how to differentiate that. And finally, your stool might contain undigested food, might also be foul smelling because it's not getting digested real well, mucus-like, light in color, greasy or poorly formed. So these are some of the signs of enzyme deficiency. It could also be signs of bile deficiency with the gallbladder and the liver not producing properly. And the reason that the food would come out foul smelling is because it's not really well digested. And think about how food is if you were to leave it on your counter for 24 hours or more. It kind of starts to go bad and it doesn't smell real good. You can also have deficiencies of some of your fat-soluble vitamins. Like say, for example, you just keep taking vitamin D, but you can't seem to get your levels to improve. It could be because you don't have enough of the lipase enzyme, which would digest that. You may be taking steps to improve your health, improving your diet, but you're not getting the appropriate response. It might be you're not taking enough enzymes, or you're not making enough enzymes, and then if you're taking them, that you might not be taking enough. The indigestion and fullness that can last 2 to 4 hours. Difficulty losing weight because your metabolism will slow down when you're not digesting your food properly. You're not getting enough of the nutrition, and you're not getting the nutrients that you need to feed the Krebs cycle, which is that energy metabolism cycle in each of your cells. And if you don't have the B vitamins and some of the other minerals that Krebs cycle needs, you're not going to be able to lose weight because your metabolic rate is going to go down. Your thyroid is going to be affected. Some people will have a pain or tenderness on the left side under the rib in the area near where their pancreas lies. Excessive gas, lots of passing wind. Nausea and vomiting is not most common with this, but it can happen. If we have all this low pancreatic enzymes, what kind of things can cause it? Well, certain autoimmune diseases, cystic fibrosis is one of those that can create a problem with low pancreatic enzymes. And people with cystic fibrosis just don't have, their pancreas is affected. Drinking alcohol can affect your pancreas's ability to make enzymes. And in fact, chronic alcohol consumption can actually inflame and irritate the pancreas and is the leading cause of pancreatitis and also of pancreatic cancer. If you've got stress, ongoing stress, remember we talk a lot about what stress does to your body, but the excess levels of cortisol, it turns off your digestion. It sends a signal that says, no, pancreas, don't make enzymes right now because this person is running away from a tiger. Thank you very much. We'll come back later, we'll make them later. But if you're always under stress, then your pancreas doesn't ever get back to doing its job. If you eat too much heavy processed food, which just requires a lot of digestive juice to break down, it's just going to wear your pancreas out, and over time, your enzyme creating capacity goes down, and you won't be making enough enzyme. chronic overeating is very similar. You're just eating too much food for your body to really efficiently be able to handle it at any one given time. And so it overtaxes your abilities. And finally, if you overeat cooked foods, and the reason for this is when you cook a food, when you heat it above about 118 degrees, you start to destroy the enzymes. It doesn't mean all the enzymes are gone at 118 degrees. Some of them are preserved a little bit beyond that, but that's where it starts to break down. And a heavily cooked meal, doesn't have much left in the way of enzymes. So it's not going to be able to help digest itself. If you eat raw foods or fermented foods or sprouted and germinated type foods, which have a lot of active enzymes in them, those enzymes can actually help your body to digest by helping to digest themselves. When you cook the foods, you're having to rely on your body and your pancreas to produce the enzymes, and it can get worn out.